Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, October 21st, 2022. Parties implementing South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement are likely to miss their own deadline set in a new roadmap.
It cannot be really a one-day, two-day process. You know, this body is going to be reconstituted by a number of stakeholders, and these stakeholders include, you know, the political parties, the agreement, the civil society, the women groups, the religious, you know, persons of special needs.
And a senior health official in the contested Abyei area says 12 health facilities were destroyed by violence and floods.
More than 7 health facilities in that site. And people have been displaced to Abyei town and some areas to the River Kir. The issue of flood is the second challenge that's facing the area now.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Parties implementing South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement say they will not meet the October 30th target for establishing a constitutional drafting committee as required by a new roadmap for the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. Officials say the parliament is yet to enact the required legislation to guide the committee. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The new roadmap agreed to in August for implementing the peace deal requires that the Constitutional Drafting Committee be formed by October 30th, but officials say Parliament has yet to enact the necessary legislation. Parliament has yet to pass a constitutional making process bill which would pave the way for writing the permanent constitution. John Aganyi, spokesperson of South Sudan Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says it's unlikely the establishment of the Constitutional Drafting Committee will occur by October 30th as required by the roadmap. He tells this program that once Justice Minister Robin Madol Arol introduces the bill in Parliament, a number of things must happen before the President can sign it into a law.
The specialized committee concerned will either decide to make the public hearing, and after making the public hearing, they will put in their own input as the committee. And then after that, when they make the necessary arrangement for it to be tabled for the second table, then eventually it goes to the second table. Then now, that bill, if it is passed to the third reading, when the real scrutiny takes place at that stage, and it is passed to the fourth stage,
the parties already missed the August 30th deadline for establishing the National Constitutional Review Commission. Aganyi says work on the permanent constitution cannot begin until President Salva Kiir signs the constitution-making bill into a law. Peter Lomude, a lawmaker from the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says South Sudan Justice Minister Robin Madol Arol introduced the bill in Parliament months ago, but its passage is delayed due to a lack of political will from some parties to the peace agreement. He agrees the deadline for creating the Constitutional Drafting Committee will probably be missed.
It cannot be really a one-day, two-day process. You know, this body is going to be reconstituted by a number of stakeholders, and these stakeholders include, you know, the political parties, the agreement, the civil society, the women groups, the religious, you know, persons of special need. You know, it's going to be a body that's going to be reconstituted, you know, by a number of stakeholders. And the law requires that we are going to have a body called a task force.
The Ministry of Justice will need to establish the task force after the bill is passed and signed into a law. The task force is to ensure that members nominated by the various stakeholders to the National Constitutional Review Commission meet the requirements for them to be absorbed into the commission. Member of Parliament Chan Deng Maror, a member of the SPLM-IO, says the bill is likely to be retabled in its second reading next week.
What is going to happen? We are going actually to go chapters by chapters, and then we will actually put on what is actually the best way for the people of South Sudan.
activist Akoch Ajang, chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, who participated in the peace process, warns that missing roadmap deadlines are detrimental in efforts to restore peace in the country.
Any mistake, any delayment not to meet the deadline, it shows that the parties are not serious to implement and respect the deadline.
Under the Revitalized Peace Deal, the Constitutional Making Process Bill is the legal framework that shall provide the legal environment for work to commence on the permanent constitution-making process. President Kiir launched work on the constitution-making process last year, which was facilitated by the Max Planck Foundation for International Peace and Rule of Law, a German-based institute renowned internationally for constitution-making. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Health officials in the Abyei Special Administrative Area say conflict and flooding have prevented residents from accessing healthcare services. A senior health official in Abyei says 12 health facilities across the area were either submerged in floodwaters or destroyed during the recent violence in the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Dr. Ayom Kurchek, the Abyei Administrative Area Health Minister, says at least 12 health facilities are either underwater or were completely destroyed during intercommunal fighting. He says an ongoing shortage in life-saving drugs also presents a major threat as cases of waterborne diseases are on the rise.
More than 7 health facilities in that site. And people have been displaced to Abyei Town and some areas to the River Kiir. The issue of flood is the second challenge that facing the area now. Most of the areas in Abyei now is flooded. Many health facilities have been affected by this flood. Some of them have been closed down and some health facilities destroyed.
Dr. Kurchek says his ministry has formed mobile clinic teams to help displaced people and provide health care, but the health workers lack sufficient medicine and other supplies. He is urging the National Ministry of Health and humanitarian organization to intervene.
When there is a flood in the area, that means that there is a displacement of the people. People left their houses. So there will be need for the shelter, there is need for blankets, there is a need for the medicines, there is a need for the urgent interventions to help in this situation. There is a need for support for the people of Abyei.
Victoria Anip, a spokesperson for South Sudan's National Health Ministry, says health officials in Juba have not been informed about the healthcare gap in Abyei. She says the ministry is ready to respond according as it did in February when violence raged in Abyei.
Last time when the first conflict happened, myself, I went on the ground. I went on the ground with 2 charter planes and I went with medical personnel and we took medicine, we took consumables and we took even people to go and work there because when MSF deserted the place, we took our own people from National Ministry to go and support the area.
Verity Cowell, field communication coordinator in South Sudan for the French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, which has worked in Abyei, said in a WhatsApp text that MSF head of mission in South Sudan will first seek approval from its headquarters in Geneva to proceed because of the, quote, sensitivities in Abyei. Last week, officials in Abyei and Warabi State said more than 25 people were killed after armed young men suspected of crossing into Abyei from neighboring Twi County of Warabi State attacked the area. In February, several humanitarian groups, including the MSF and Save the Children, said they could not work in an area where the lives of their staff and families were in danger. The South Sudan People's Defense Force said it has deployed troops to quell tensions between communities from the disputed Abyei area and Twi County. President Salva Kiir formed a committee to investigate the root causes of conflict between the Ngok Dinka and the people of Twi County. The committee's secretary, Diu Mathok, said four government officials from Abyei and Warabe State were implicated for allegedly fueling the border conflict between the two communities. Mathok said in May the committee detained the four for allegedly fueling the conflict in the area. Since then, the detained officials have never been charged with an offense or produced in court. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
Sudanese are marking the 58th anniversary of the country's first popular uprising that toppled former military leader General Ibrahim Aboud in 1964. A Sudanese political analyst says military rule is no longer viable in Sudan. Abdallah Ali Ibrahim, a professor emeritus of African and Islamic history at the University of Missouri, says the month of October reminds Sudanese of their victory and the will of the people over military authoritarianism.
October is the mother of revolutions. So we have October, then we have the one that happened April 1985. Then we have the last one on December 2018. So we have a kind of a pattern here. A pattern of the determination, the will of the people to live in a democracy. And this will has been tampered with, destroyed a couple of times. So we have October Revolution, then we have a coup in 1969, then we have a revolution in 1985 and a coup in 1989 for 30 years, and again we have a revolution in December 2018. So this pattern is pregnant with meaning that the will of the people, that building a nation is not a one episode thing. It's a long, for the long haul. So when we celebrate October, we're really celebrating the origin of this determination to build a democratic system in Sudan.
In October 1964, Sudanese protesters overthrew the first military dictator in independent Sudan, General Ibrahim Aboud. Fast forward to October 2021, the military took back power after protesters overthrew the last military dictator, General Omar al-Bashir, who ruled for 30 years. What have we learned about military-civilian relations in Sudan?
Yeah, it is not just about the military. As you can see from the kind of the forces in called upon by the military to support them, we are talking about a conservative, patriarchal force or group or component in the region. It is a military government, but a military government representing the interests of a class of people and an ideology of patriarchy that just don't want to disappear. Because we have a military that came in 1969 with leftist tendencies. So we didn't have the same military all the time. In 1958, we have a kind of, a conservative military coup supported by conservative patriarchal components or organizations in the country. Then 1969, a leftist coup that went astray. Then the coup in 1989, that is a patriarchal thing. So the military is just the midwife, if you will, of the old society, the patriarchal society, the old forces, the traditional forces just don't want to go away.
The military has ruled Sudan for the majority of its independence since 1956, with only brief periods of democratic civilian parliamentary rule. What does it take to break this cycle of military coups in Sudan once and for all?
We need to look at the dynamics of the alliances between the military and the civilians in the military setting itself. Because during Nimeiri's period, you have liberals, leftists, independents, bureaucrats, all supporting a military government. And the same these people revolted against the regime when it went astray and turned into a theocracy. the same people. So the first thing is to clear up this misunderstanding that it is a natural political switching from the military to the, because that defines society into military and then civilians, which is unnatural, which is not real.
How do you see the current situation in Sudan with the military in power ending and the future of governance in Sudan in general?
There is this consensus that the military has run its course, because you count in October Revolution, you count the April 85 Revolution, then you have the 30 years. The military itself is no longer the military. Now you have the rabid forces. One of the most important signs of that the military is running its course is that politics itself, that its involvement in politics has caused her a lot of harm. The professional army is no longer the only army in the country. That is an important aspect of that. We are witnessing the last coup, and it is no longer the tool of suppressing the yearnings for democracy or for whatever kind of system. We reached the point in which democracy is not just a call for a good form of government, of governance. People just don't want to be lorded about, to be ordered around in family, in schools, in the job. If you look at these young people, they would like what people would say self-actualization. And self-actualization is tied to modernity and modernization. The rise of the city and the town in Sudan is calling for not a political system, not a government that is a democratic, but a society that is democratic. In the family, in the school, in wherever, you'd be an artist, you'd be a gay, you would be whatever you like. So that is existential rather than political, just political.
That's Abdullahi Ali Ibrahim, a professor emeritus of African and Islamic history at the University of Missouri. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio on Thursday. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Authorities in the Sudanese capital Khartoum deployed additional troops around institutions ahead of a protest organized by pro-democracy groups to commemorate the 58th anniversary of the 1964 October uprising against the government of Ibrahim Aboud. Bridges linking the three towns of Khartoum, Khartoum North and Omdurman have been blocked to prevent protesters from accessing the presidential palace. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Khartoum state authorities announced late last night that bridges linking Khartoum, Omdurman and Khartoum North would be closed ahead of today's protest. Heavy security deployment is visible around Khartoum government buildings. Police lodged tear gas against protesters as they tried to march towards the presidential palace. Sahar Al-Juzuli, a member of the Abu Adam Resistance Committee, tells South Sudan in Focus protesters are using the anniversary to demand military officials end the coup and allow the establishment of a civilian-led government. She says last year on the same day, revolutionaries were strong, but military leaders hijacked the revolution and spoiled the aspirations of the young Sudanese. Al-Jazuli says, we were well united and were aware of our objectives to safeguard the revolution and the transitional period until we achieve a civilian-led transitional government. On October 21, 1964, a protest was staged against the government of former Sudanese President Ibrahim Aboud, which forced him to resign. Al-Jazuli says, the military rule has managed to divide the revolutionaries over the last 1 year to try to cripple their demand for civilian rule. She called on all civilian forces to unite and continue to pursue military leaders to end the coup. She says all the political parties, resistance committees, and professionals, nothing can unite them at the moment more than the objectives of the revolution. Despite these common goals, she says, at the moment, we are unable to end the current coup military rule. Al-Jazuli says it is time for all civilian groups to work together and end the military rule in Sudan. She says she hopes that by this time next year, if democracy has not been achieved, people will be expressing their opinions in a safe and democratic environment. Al-Jazuli says if this year passes without ending the coup, it will be difficult for us to achieve the objectives of our revolution and the end of the dictatorship in the country. As long as we have a common goal, she says, we should all unite to work together to end the coup. In October last year, Sudan's military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan led a coup overthrowing the civilian-led government headed by former Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. In July, al-Burhan announced the military would step aside and allow civilian leaders to form the government. But that statement has not been implemented as efforts by the United Nations and African Union continue for reaching a political agreement for the way forward. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The U.S. Africa Business Center of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is convening its first annual Africa Digital Innovation Competition for African startups. VOA is working as a media partner with the Africa Business Center on this initiative. Out of 17,000 candidates in 50 African countries, 10 top finalists have been decided, and for the next 2 weeks, we'll bring you a look at each one. Today, we hear from Rowol Fosi with the startup company SkyV Solutions in Cameroon.
My name is Rowol Fosi. I'm 37 years old, and I'm the founder of a young startup company called SkyV Solutions, based in Douala in Cameroon. We applied to the 2022 African Digital Innovation Competition because we hope that through the competition, we can get the visibility necessary to attract us additional resources, both intellectual and financial, to help us develop the next phases of our application and also help us scale across Africa. To be one of the top 10 finalists of the competition is a huge honor, especially for such a young team, but it's also a big pride for our country, Cameroon. And it is, in addition to that, it's validation of our solution and confirmation that we're headed in the right direction. Also, it's confirmation that with a little bit of courage and a lot of determination, we can accomplish great things. Our solution is a very simple application that makes it possible for anybody, private business, contractor, building a home or a business anywhere around the world, to access their building remotely as if they're actually there physically and be able to appreciate progress over time from a visual standpoint and a quantitative standpoint. Giving them understanding of exactly what's being done on their job site over time and what resources have been used over time. The biggest impact that our solution will have on our society as a whole is that it would significantly reduce the cost of construction in our communities by 5 to 10%. It would do so by reducing the amount of waste, both in time and resources experienced by most construction owners and construction managers currently in our environment. If we win the competition, I'll be extremely happy for my young team. In 3 years of entrepreneurship, one thing I've learned is that success is really less in the destination and more in the journey. So rather than focus on the future of what I would do, I choose to celebrate the present and the fact that we indeed have been selected amongst the top 10 companies, young companies in the continent.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with your text and voice messages. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Before I read back what you wrote to us about our coverage this week, we requested last week that SSIF fans send in recorded messages as well. We have two recorded messages that we will play for you.
Hello, VOA. This is Robert Nyombe. I am in the Bidibidi refugee settlement. I did hear in yesterday's broadcast that some cattle rustlers attacked a cattle camp, and in the attack, close to 30 people lost their lives, including cattle as well. It's not the first time that such kind of incidences had been happening in South Sudan, and I really doesn't know where the cattle keepers are getting their guns. And what has the government really done to make sure that the lives and properties of people are protected? Otherwise, I send my sincere condolences to the bereaved families. Thanks for the soul.
Hello, VOA. I'm Adrama James Alino from Juba. I would like to thank the government of South Sudan for temporarily deploying the armed forces between Warabi State and contested Abyei region. But addressing the root causes of the conflict by stakeholders are very important in tackling all the social injustice, prevent revenge attack, and encourage permanent peace to prevail. Thank you.
Many of you also wrote to us this week about our coverage of intercommunal fighting in and around the Abyei area and other parts of South Sudan. James Roy Majok from Bentiu Town in Unity State says, "Hi Nabil and John Tanza. I'm appealing to the South Sudan government to intervene quickly into the ongoing fighting between Dinka Twit youth and Dinka Ngok youth that has caused big insecurity among those two communities for some months. They have yet to be stopped by Twit authorities and Abyei Administrative Area authorities." Joel Philip Kwan in Bortown, Jonglei State writes, "Hello VOA, I would like to extend my gratitude to the Minister of Defense for taking the tremendous decision to deploy South Sudan People's Defense Forces to Abyei areas in order to defuse the situation between Twit communities and Abyei communities. We need peace to prevail between the two communities to live in amicable ways. There is nothing better than peace within us." Daniel Tongun Tombe from Bidibidi writes, "Hello South Sudan in Focus. I am so dejected with the news of innocent blood that has passed away in the Upper Nile region. May their souls rest in peace. I am urging the government of South Sudan to intervene in that meaningless fighting so that people in those areas can live in peace. We as South Sudanese shouldn't be killing each other for no reason." Tom Chuni Yokwai from Juba writes, "To me, on what's happening in Malakal, it's really sad news in South Sudan. We need our government in Juba to stop the fighting in Malakal." Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba writes, "I am happy to see brilliant, giant and reliable youth of South Sudan. If the country is falling from the sky and is in need of a strong people to avoid falling on the earth's surface, I think South Sudan will not reach the ground. My fellow youth, try to overcome the challenges that you are facing. This country is ours. It's the system of this government that makes it difficult to gain our potential." Jacob Dior Machuen in Juba says, "Abyei is bleeding again. I call upon the national government to look into this issue that occurs every time so that it's brought to an end." The opinions expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Silver X and WJ with the song Dola Jadid.
Sawa, yeah, magema, yeah, wangi, yeah.
We have been listening to Silver X and WJ with their song Dola Jadi. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.